Right, this is the Cool Shit Podcast. Each week we round up the latest cool shit, helping us think different and keep inspired. What makes it in, what gets left out, and what gets challenged. Is it cool, is it shit?
Or does it cross the magic threshold and come bona fide, certified cool shit?
Welcome to the editor's meeting.
And welcome to the Cool Shit Podcast, episode 47.
Woo!
Please don't do that.
Fortunately, she was so far away from her mic just after I said speaking to your mic that you probably didn't hear it. Bree, speak into your mic, but don't speak into your mic.
So, my name's Gareth Carr, and I am the host that just won't quit. Literally, I have tried plenty of times, but I just keep getting pulled back in. Gina is off gallivanting around New York, so you have me again, but let's just get on with it. Stop talking about myself and talk about Chris.
I'm here.
How you doing?
I'm good, man. Thank you. How are you?
Not too bad. We've stopped counting how many times you've been on this, right?
Yeah, we have, but...
But you haven't.
About 10. I don't think it's quite 10. I'd probably say it's maybe 8.
Okay, we'll get Pablo to check that afterwards and do the numbers. Bree, you're back for, I believe, a third time?
No, this is my second.
Is it?
Yeah.
You sure?
Yeah, this is the second time you've heard a woo on this.
Okay, great. Well, okay. How are you?
Good. Yeah. You know, equipped.
You're more equipped than the last time. Are you saying your performance last time was shit?
It was something. It was about rats. So now I'm back.
Okay. Well, hopefully you've got a strong story. And the editor-in-chief, and we don't get to say this since I've left the podcast, but AKA the little chef. How you going?
Oh, good. Gina still says that.
Does she?
Yeah, so clearly you haven't been listening.
Well, I don't listen if I'm not on it. It's not interesting, is it?
I wish I had that luxury.
Rubbish. I listen to all of them. Don't you worry. How have you been?
Yeah, I'm all right. Yeah, not bad. Very busy, Gareth. Very busy.
Oh,
very busy, man. Very busy, man.
So busy. So busy.
Yeah, but I'm the busiest.
Okay, well, thanks for squeezing this in.
You're welcome.
How have this story been, then?
Well... ask Chris, because Chris had to find him this week.
Oh, because you're so busy. You're
so busy. He's so busy, yes.
So
offload.
So if there is poor quality control, we're going to blame Chris, aren't we?
That's exactly... You read between the lines of what I was saying. Yeah, so if this is a bad episode, blame Chris.
Brilliant. Okay.
But if it's the best one, then yeah.
Then it was thanks to me choosing from the long list. Yeah.
So go on then. What's the first story? Let's jump in.
All right. Everyone remember Firefest? Fire Festival.
The failed festival by Billy, what was his name?
McFarlane.
That
McFarlane?
Was it. Yeah.
Which is weird because he does look a bit like Seth MacFarlane, actually, doesn't he?
Does. Yeah.
Interesting.
So that was a...
I believe it was a joint venture between Billy McFarlane and Ja Rule.
Real weird partnership,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was a great Netflix documentary probably about 2 years ago. And like
yeah, probably a bit more. It was probably about 3 or 4 years ago, yeah.
Right, okay. Well, he's back, is he?
He's back. Did he go to prison for a bit? I think he went to prison.
I think he did.
He went to prison for a bit.
He went for four years.
Did a two-stretch. And now he's out. And the first thing he's done is announce Fire Festival 2.
Oh, no. Really?
Yeah. At least he's announced it via a tweet, which says Fire Festival 2 is happening. Tell me why you should be invited.
Oh, right. Okay. So he hasn't learned from his past mistakes, or has he? Is he promising anything? Has he said that it's all above board this time? Is he saying that it'll be things like, you know, like a place to camp, for instance, and actual live music?
I think he's been wisely non-committal thus far, and he's basically just gauging interest. Because I think he's gauging interest. I think he's trying to build the hype. Because I mean, he definitely can't put this on himself. He doesn't have the money, but that didn't stop him last time. But I think what he's doing is basically campaigning for somebody with more money than sense who thinks it might be a laugh to get involved with Fire Festival 2.
Now, the funny thing about this, like straight away, that I'm thinking is like, weirdly, I think there'd be a market for it.
I agree, yeah. I don't know, like sort of where you see memes in real life, like so we've talked about them here with like the Binley Mega Chippy, like it's Morbin Time, the Minions thing. Like, I feel like this is kind of the same as that. And it's like, he was a meme and the guy who said like you'll do anything for a bottle of water sort of thing. He was referring to sucking dick, of course. That's quite deeply ingrained, I believe, in like the mind of young people in particular. And I feel like they'd want to be.
I think they want to go to a disaster, don't
they? There's a kind of morbid fascination with something that they think is going to be absolutely shit. Because then, if it is good, then it's good, and if it is shit, then they can kind of enjoy it ironically, which is what they really want anyway.
I wonder if there's sort of like a third segment to this audience of like bros that believe the dream is just going to happen this time, man, and that he was wronged and it should have gone well last time, he was just unlucky or some bullshit like that.
Well, I did think if he pulls this off, the American dream is still well and truly alive.
What is it about those sorts of grifters that nowadays it seems like, you know, okay, so we're living in a time where everyone talks about cancel culture, but it seems there are certain types of characters, Jordan Belford, Anna, what was her name?
Delvey or something?
Yeah, yeah. Anna Delvey, who we just have that fascination with, that they're still bankable, even though we know they've been dog shit terrible.
Yeah, it's weird. You know, we're like serial killers. This is a weird example, but serial killer things are so popular. And it's almost like people like seeing the explanation of how things unraveled and how it went awfully wrong. This is kind of like a version of that, but with much lower stakes. And I guess you get to see people kind of redeeming themselves to a sense. Like, and in the same way, like, those stories are just obviously interesting. Like, The Wolf of Wall Street is a fucking great film. And I don't know if that was exactly how it all went down. And same with that series about Anna Delvey. Like, I don't know, people are obviously just fascinated by these kind of shithouses who manage to swindle the world. Like Tinder Swindler as well is another one. People who do bad things, but it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, but so it's interesting, isn't it? Because say like Anna Delvey, I don't think she's shown any contrition. And I don't think that so far Billy has. But when you look at Jordan Belford, he's done a lot of podcasts where you listen to his story. It is really interesting. But it's kind of like, he's sort of sorry.
Oh, he sort fuck of off. No. He says, like, oh, this is a cautionary tale, right? Cautionary tale. But listen how much of a legend I am when I shagged these 10 prostitutes. So I think he kind of, his lawyers make him say that for his kind of image. But I don't think I think he might regret getting caught. But even that, I'm not sure, because then he wouldn't have had the Leonardo DiCaprio. Now. So he's managed to kind of basically swindle people, get caught, and then swindle
have a great fucking story,
and then swindle people again by telling people how we swindle people.
Yeah, right.
We do really love to glamorize bad people in the world, don't we? We give them a lot of attention.
We're fascinated by that.
And like the same with the other one, the Tinder swindler.
Yeah,
like he's working again.
Right.
Yeah. Like he's swindling again. We're all
is
like,
he working
great.
Again? What's he doing these days? I didn't watch that one.
Oh, he goes on dates and he steals your money.
He like finds them on Tinder, swindles them, and says, "Oh, I'm going to take you on a little trip."
Oh, yeah, no, I know what he did. What's he doing? He said he's working again. What's he doing now?
Oh, he's like, if you go on his Instagram, like he's in Israel with pictures of him, his fast cars, and again it's just money and that lifestyle, that Andrew Tate lifestyle,
just got out of prison.
Even if people know that it's vapid and fake, they still swarm around it. People still love seeing pictures of you with, like, you know, a Maserati in the background, even though they know that you know that they know that you don't own it. It's fucking weird.
Yeah, and I'm thinking about it. You know, like any film when there's a baddie, the baddie's always more interesting than the good guy. This is kind of like a safe form of baddies. Like, for example, because this guy, well, he sold a fake festival, Anna Delvey swindled a load of people. It's all kind of rich people crimes, isn't it? It's not kind of as bad as the serial killers. And it's a much safer version of seeing a villain, I guess, basically.
And again, social media and content legends.
It's
clout. Legends.
It's all clout. It's notoriety. It's kind of this post-truth world that we live in. It's just pure that kind of old axiom that, like, all publicity is good publicity. I don't think that was true, but I think it might start. I think it might have started to become true.
Like,
yeah,
publicity is views, right? Chris, would you go? You're a big fan of going to festivals. Going to Glastonbury last year. Have you got a ticket this year?
No.
Oh, well, now it's a perfect opportunity for you to replace that calendar visit to
Fyre Festival. Be reborn. But I don't know if. Initially, who was the audience for Fyre Festival? Because everyone...
Rich
Bros. And
rich influencer ties. It was kind of Coachella, wasn't it?
It was the influencer audience. Okay?
Yeah, sure,
the people
yeah.
that could afford to fucking throw $5,000 on a...
Or like to look like they can.
Exactly.
Right,
yeah.
That's not you, is it?
No, yeah, this is absolutely, absolutely not me.
Right, okay, like, I want to pose it to everyone, I guess, like... If someone told me they're going to pay for a ticket for me to go to the Fyre Festival, I would go. I would just, out of sick fascination, I would 100%
absolutely.
Go.
I wouldn't go.
You wouldn't go? Bree wouldn't go?
No, I wouldn't go.
But you're getting moralistic about it, or you just wouldn't trust that you'd be able to get a bottle of water?
I think that's the thing. I would think, oh, there's no tents here. Oh, last one didn't have no water. So what am I doing there?
Yeah, you're no fool. You're no fool. You're like, guys.
I'm thinking ahead.
Yeah, right. Okay. Yeah.
If it was shit and you came back saying, cool, Fyre Festival was shit, you'd be like, yeah, that's kind of on you, isn't it? Like, you probably should have expected that.
Yeah, sure. I don't think anyone's going to go and feel sorry for you if you're like, oh, I thought it was really going to work out this time.
They probably worked out the kinks, haven't they?
Yeah, maybe.
But I think also in my head, I'm like, I can watch this on TikTok. Someone's going to TikTok
that's
it.
What a depressing point of view.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't need to go to Glastonbury. I'm watching it on TikTok.
Watch it on BBC.
I was about to start lamenting over the youth of our nation, and you're older than me as well.
But I think the shithousery at Fyre Fest 2, will be incredible. And Netflix are obviously going to hop on this.
Oh, 100%.
So, I don't know, maybe he's just done this for another Netflix doc about himself.
Well, like, it's another point about Anna Delvey. She is in incarceration. She's now under house arrest, and she's creating a show. I don't know if it's with Netflix or HBO or someone, one of the big networks or content networks, where she's having people over for dinner and they're filming it, right? So it just feels like he would probably get money thrown in from Netflix to kind of like be there, right?
Oh, I feel like there's, and also where it's kind of, it's so well known and there's a level of clout and notoriety attached to it. There's enough people with more money than sense who would want to get involved with it, kind of for like the shits and gigs. This would be like the type of thing that Elon Musk would invest in, for example. Like, you could absolutely see him putting this on. There's always been people who have been willing to lose money on events. There's a Floyd Mayweather fight recently with some fucking guy from Geordie Shore, and like, it didn't make any money. Nobody went to it, but that's just some rich guy was like, yeah, I want to see that. Fuck yeah. So I think that's kind of the same with this.
A weird combination for a rich guy to want to see.
Well, I want to see Floyd Mayweather beat up this Geordie bloke. Yeah.
Exactly. All right, okay, interesting stuff. What's your second story?
I'm not sure. And not as in I'm not sure in terms of I'm not sure which one I want to bring. I mean, I know which one I'm bringing, but I'm not sure what it is. So basically, Ada, who is kind of the original OG artist robot who's been in cool shit a load of times, she's linked up with Baz Luhrmann, as in director Baz Luhrmann, and Bombay Sapphire, of whom apparently Baz Luhrmann is the creative director, which I did not know. And they've asked for submissions of artwork from the people of the world, which this robot artist will then remix into new artworks with her kind of actual hands, because she's not just a program like Dali. She's an actual like kind of android sort of thing. So remix a load of art to create the world's biggest collaborative AI art collection, which will then be displayed in the Design Museum next weekend.
Fucking hell. I
know. I
need to uncross my eyes. Jesus Christ.
That's a lot to take in, isn't it?
I think this is like one of those peak AI stories, isn't it?
Well, this is more confusing. And I think it's more confusing because it's one of the examples of which there's presumably going to be many in the future of people using kind of the mania around it online and trying to bring it into the real world. And I think we don't quite have the words nor the concepts to make those two things make sense together yet, which is why it's quite a mouthful and it's a bit of a kind of, then we do this, then we do this, then we do this.
Those are like bad ideas. You know when you're coming up with ideas and you find yourself doing, and then after that happens, then then this happens. And you know, like, I hate it when you're critted and someone's like, wait a sec, you've lost me. That's what this idea, how the fuck did it get through the net?
Because the best ideas are always where it's just very simple, and very gettable. And it can be kind of multi-layered, but like the main part has to be obvious. Whereas with this, it's a bit confusing what the main part is and how like Bombay Sapphire fit into it. I like all of the various components, which is why it confuses me. Like AI art, sick. Baz Luhrmann, yeah, all right. Robot lady, sure. Design Museum, great. But putting them all together and it's just like, hang on, what's the main bit here?
Yeah, so as I understand it, they're going to ask for submissions from real artists.
Oh, they already have. So this is the other interesting thing. So this started last year when Baz Luhrmann put out the call for people to send in, they said inspiration, so whether it's like their paintings or photos or whatever. And then, this is where it gets confusing, and then it goes to this robot lady and she does something with it.
So this is like 12 months in the making.
Yeah, exactly. Which is why it's interesting, because
12 months in the making for a shit house.
Well, this is why it's interesting, because when they first started this campaign, when you think about where Dali and all of those were at the time, they weren't really around much. So this was probably a year ago, like well ahead of its time, and would have been proper groundbreaking.
But whereas now, funnily enough, feels like behind the time. But exactly. AI art is just like, it's out there, right?
Exactly. So I think they had this bright idea, like, oh, there's this robot lady powered by AI, and she makes art. And like, but she's still kind of got the same limitations that a human would, because she's actually got to make it. Whereas obviously the advantage now of AI art online is you press a button and you get kind of an infinite amount of them.
Yeah, exactly. And also this sort of like idea that she's going to interpret all the art that's sent to her. Well, like, that's what like Midjourney does that a whole lot better. It's not just interpreting interpreting art, it's interpreting everything, right?
So this is quite reflective of how advanced AI has actually become in 12 months.
That was kind of exactly why I put it in, because we've spoken about this before, about how even, again, I keep talking about DALL-E, but how, like, when we first heard about DALL-E, it was like, what the fuck, this is crazy. Whereas even now, that looks like a little bit outdated compared to, like, you see that some of the mid-journeys of, like, the Donald Trump getting arrested, where they all, you still know they're not real, but it's almost kind of photorealistic now, whereas it was just kind of a leprechaun riding a sheep in the desert sort of stuff.
On that note, I'll come to you, Bree. What do you make of this story?
I think it kind of takes away from reality. I think it takes away the artist's work in a way, because now it's a robot making it and it's not a person doing it. So is that now going to be the future, that robots make our art and, you know, we now don't have a connection with the art?
I think it's a future, but I think that's just the way things are going. I don't think that's necessarily a good thing or a bad thing, because there's so many artists, whereas there's kind of only one robot weird artist. So if there was fucking loads of these, then you'd imagine it might recoil back the other way. And human, I don't think this is replacing human art. And also, this is the other thing where I'm wondering why they've been so vague, is maybe it's also just not very good.
Yeah, I think one thing that I'm being taught from the barrage of AI art, and where we even talked about AI art last week, but, you know, I was looking at some of the pictures that when, you know, the latest drops of right-wing people dressed in drag, and you've got, like, Steve Bannon dressed in drag.
I haven't seen that. That sounds
great.
Yeah,
I mean, they're all very good, you know, fairly funny, but it's just they all look really AI-y. They are missing a human element to it, in that, and I can't even put my finger on what that is, because a lot of it looks photorealistic. I know once you dig in and you look at the back, then, like, some of the hands are wrong and the signs are kind of weird, but there's something that seems to be missing a soul. And this idea with Baz Luhrmann doesn't help that. It feels to me like this is even a step removed. It's less human than what's happening in AI art, so I'm not holding out much hope for it.
Well, this is the strange thing, because I said, like, the idea behind it was meant to be that the kind of there's inspiration and there's art all around you, even when you think there isn't. Like, and I think, which is why they chose Baz Luhrmann, or at least this is what they said, because he supposedly grew up in, like, the kind of outback. And he talks about how, like, there was just, like, one gas station and he'd kind of look at it and just create these magical worlds in his head all around.
Oh, well done, Baz.
That was kind of my reaction.
Jesus.
And also, like, this... So the claim that it's kind of helping people be more creative is a bit of a nonsense. Because you're saying, just take a picture of your foot and we'll make it into something for you.
Yeah, bring back real artists. That's what I was saying.
Saying that, I do still quite like this, though. Because I'm still... I've always been fascinated by this kind of scary robot artist lady.
It is very intriguing. You know, we're talking about a massive director and a massive well-known brand coming together. But yeah, like Gareth said, I don't know
what the fuck's happening.
Yeah, we have no indication.
I kind of want to go to it. Like, I mean, it's only down the road. I'm kind of intrigued to see what it actually amounts to in the real world.
When she's back on the podcast, Gina, you're in charge of Culture Club. Get us some tickets to this event. We want to see the results. All right? Chris.
Yo.
What have you brought for us this week?
I've brought something quite big.
Oh, something quite big.
Quite big.
Oh, easy, buddy.
So my story is coming from the World Brotherhood of the Knights of the Giant Omelet of Bessari.
I think it's the Bessai.
Bessai. Okay.
What is that? What is, like,
so if I pronounce it right, Adele can give me some brownie points next week. Bessai is a small town, southern France. And basically, they've got this tradition. So every Easter, a team of volunteers in the village or the town collect 15,000 eggs and create a ginormous omelette for everyone to consume.
All right, there it is. It's a giant omelette. You've brought us giant omelette.
The picture didn't really help you. It's exactly what you think
it is. Yeah, it's exactly what it is. So,
or is it? It looks more like scrambled eggs.
Yeah.
How are they going to flip that?
Right, so actually, one of my good friends actually went.
It's an omelette.
And it was actually scrambled egg.
You can report in. It was actually scrambled egg.
Yeah.
Do you know what? When I cook an omelette, it turns into scrambled eggs. It's like, they're fucking hard to cook.
No.
They are. Because either, like, they just burn and then they stick and then I'm like, fuck it, you're scrambled eggs now. Or I'm doing something wrong. Clearly I'm doing something wrong.
I think I'm doing everything right.
Oh, can you make an omelette?
I can.
Yeah,
I put it in the oven.
Okay, all right.
Do you eat oven and omelette? I don't think that's...
We won't get into logistics, but yeah, you put it in the oven, bit of cheese and it, poof.
Okay.
Poof. Would
you go to this French region for a massive omelette festival?
No, because in my head it will be on the ground and right, I'll be eating the ground.
So it's a 13-foot wide frying pan that weighs about a ton, and you've got a team of chefs with ginormous wooden paddles cooking this omelette for probably about
45
minutes.
What if someone falls in the omelette? With a psalm!
Like an Augustus Gloop sort of thing.
Yeah, right. Do we know any safety features? Is there
a, it doesn't look... I think they just trust that people just won't jump in the omelette.
Okay. We're supposed to sort of interrogate these stories a little bit more, but I'm just saying, Chris, this is a weird story.
I don't know what to say about it.
Yeah, me neither.
There's a large crowd watching it as well, which I'd find really off-putting because I can make an omelette, but I couldn't do it with someone lurking over my shoulder. But it makes me smile. Right. I mean, it's nice to see people. It's nice to see people working together,
I
isn't
think
it?
If I was like passing, and I was like, you know, I was on holiday and I was in the next village down, and someone's like, oh, they're making a massive omelette, I'd be like, oh yeah, maybe.
Oh
maybe,
no, you
go. Maybe
go
over.
What do you mean, maybe?
You go. I quite like it in a way because you do get these. We have some of these in the UK as well, like these weird little like the thing where people chase like a bit of cheese rolling down a hill or something.
Yeah.
And there's like the gurning championships, gravy wrestling. Like I'm slightly
even Morris dancers. They're fucking
exactly.
Weird.
I am slightly interested in these kind of weird niche micro communities
that you see in like tiny towns like. It's part
it's true,
of
it's actually,
part
do you know what?
Culture.
Like we
it's been
got
going
it's part of the culture,
years.
You bigot. Yeah.
50 years, that's as long as Glastonbury.
But not quite as successful. Okay, so next story. Brie, I hope you haven't brought another giant anything. No, not more giant food, is it?
I wouldn't hold on to that hope because it is. Okay. So we all have those what if moments, right, when we're with our friends. Well, two creatives, Tom and Dylan, have actually gone ahead and made the ultimate what if and created a giant baked bean.
Oh my god, so we've got a giant omelette followed by a fucking giant baked bean.
It's a breakfast series. You got Fire
Fest.
This
is like Agincourt. It's the UK versus France.
Well, we've gone from AI robots to festivals to like fucking omelettes and beans.
Yeah,
we cover a lot of AI.
It's a nice kind of palate cleanser from all the scary robot stuff.
Okay, so what these guys have made a giant baked bean using baked beans.
So they use two tins and basically merge both these tins and the beans.
How the fuck is this a story?
Into one big baked bean.
Okay, so now what's the significance of this? Why are we learning about it? Is this the sort of thing that you do when you're stoned at 3 a.m. with your mates? How is this being reported? Why do we know about it?
Well, in their idea, they were just like, the UK loves baked beans. They have it with their breakfast, they have it with their dinners. So they said, how are we going to elevate it? And they said the obvious step was to go big or possibly go home, but you do eat them at home.
I don't know, again, it was a little bit like the story last week about Amsterdam. I don't know why, but I've seen a video of this. And it is a huge baked bean. They've shaped it like a huge baked bean, right?
Yeah, of course they have. It looks it's very realistic.
The reason
we're talking about this is because, okay, well, for example, when I first saw this story, I saw it in the New York Post. So that shows just how kind of mega viral this has gone. So they've obviously tapped into something. And something that isn't, because a baked bean is kind of so quintessentially British, but it's almost more quintessentially British to people who aren't British. Like, in the same way that you think people in Australia, oh, they probably drink Fosters all the time. No one drinks fucking Fosters. And like Americans, like they'll say like, you guys eat beans for breakfast? Like, so they kind of see
a fucking weird thing to have for breakfast. Isn't
is
it?
It?
Yeah,
is it?
Yeah.
It
is.
No,
hang on. Hang on.
How is it?
Having a piece of this.
When would you eat your beans though?
I quite like it for lunch personally, like a baked bean and cheese panini.
Okay.
I'm not knocking that you have them for breakfast. I know you
like
do.
A
it's
still
a bit weird thing. Like, if I did, I'm not a massive fan of baked beans, but if I did, I'd have beans on toast and more of a lunchtime affair.
In fairness, I agree, but I would never have a full English breakfast for breakfast.
But you have.
No, I would never. I have it for lunch.
Really? Well, that's the only time you have it, really, because you're hungover and it's like
kind,
past
yeah, exactly.
11 o'clock.
That's what I'm saying. I've never got up at like half eight. I never thought I was going
to
do myself a
that's
fucking
what
massive
fire. I feel like that's what I used to do in the 70s. They're like, morning, mum. There you go. Here's your full English. You're like, oh, girl, I'm ready for school. Bye. Like that sort of styley, right?
Yeah, I don't.
Enjoy the beans.
Yeah, what you're so beautifully describing there is exactly what I don't do.
Right. Okay. Why the fuck? No one's answering me. Why do we know? Why is this being reported in?
Because it's gone mega viral. But this is the thing. It's the intangible.
New York Times.
Yeah.
So sorry. Did they put this out on? I'm trying to dig into this. Did they put this out on TikTok?
Just all across socials, I think. So and it's also funny.
I think it first appeared on Reddit.
Okay.
Ah.
Okay.
And then
always feel like Reddit is like a more superior version of social media, isn't it? It's like if you're kind of like, a lot of Reddit, you feel a little bit more learned.
It's a bit more discerning, I suppose. It is, there's a couple extra steps to get there.
And these guys are creative,
but this is the thing, so this is our industry.
It looks legit
as
well. They printed the can. It looks legit.
Right. Okay.
They've done regardless of what you think of Beans or the Big Bean, they've done a very good job with it.
Yeah, I like it because I think they've probably tried to get loads of ideas away and they were probably working at some big agency.
That's what I thought.
And the creative director, like he or she is just like screw face now going like, oh, shit, I'm a Big Bean story. And they're like the toast of the town.
Well, this is the thing as well, because I looked into it because I had a sneaking suspicion. I was like, is this connected with Heinz at all? Because they've done it with Heinz baked beans. And they've mocked up like a fake tin with all the Heinz stuff on it, the Heinz logo, but it just says Big Bean rather than Baked Bean. And there was, I saw a quote from them saying like, oh well, if you're going to do a big baked beans, it's got to be Heinz. So I thought, okay,
I feel like this is great for Heinz. Well, and I feel like because they're creatives, you're totally right, like are they moonlighting, is this a side project where they're like, you know, they know someone at Heinz and they're like just, you know.
But that's what I was thinking, because I thought, I reckon there's something deep here, because it's great for Heinz. You know, I think they did the same with ketchup. They did an AI thing, like if you put in ketchup then it comes up with Heinz. They're showing that like, well, beans means Heinz, that's their whole thing. So if there's going to be a colossal baked bean, then it would have to be Heinz. So I looked it up, and it says that Heinz have declined to comment on the giant baked bean.
I feel like when you're declining to comment, that just means
is
like,
that
yes,
another marketing,
like?
No, yeah. I don't think they're actually officially, I think these two fellas have just done it for the fucks of it, like. But it's great kind of free advertising for Heinz. Maybe they wanted a job at Heinz, I don't know.
Well, I'm going to have a break from the podcast next week, and hopefully, if she ever makes it back, Gina will return.
But I haven't seen Gina in years.
I know, right? I know. Like, yeah, what a host she is. But I've had a good time on the podcast the last couple of weeks, and Chris, you'll be back again.
We're not sure about you, Bree.
Jury's still out. James, thanks very much.
Thank
See you later.
Bye-bye.